Hi, this is Keith.
What's his name?
This is Keith, your host at the Retro Radio Podcast.
I'm in love.
Oh, that again.
The internet's best kept secret source of your favorite old time radio shows.
What's the point? We may never know the answer to that one, Jeff.
It's the place where new tech meets old tech and likes it.
Really, I'm so embarrassed.
You want to know something?
What?
It's nothing to be ashamed of.
Always family friendly, always good, clean fun.
I don't like him, Marshall.
I don't like you.
Please do stop by the webpage at retro-otr.com and leave us a comment or drop us an email. We'd love to hear from you.
Well, here we are, Alice. Let's get into the studio.
Well, hey everyone, this is Keith, your host at the Retro Radio Podcast, and today we have a feature from Fibber McGee and Molly. This is one from their later shows from the 1950s when they were only 15 minutes. I believe this one is called Biography for a Luncheon. And this is, as I said in their previous podcast, their main writer and Bill Thompson, which I think is one and the same, but I could be mistaken. He had left the show to work on his own projects, particularly the Halls of Ivy. And so the shows are shorter. The cast of characters is actually a lot more streamlined because Bill Thompson did a lot of their voices. We still do have author Q Bryan as Doc Gamble. In today's show, Fibber is trying to put together a speech, and he's having a little trouble. But we'll let the show speak for itself. So,
Keith,
enjoy that.
Keith, what about us? Can we do our thing we practiced?
What do you mean?
You know the script we did the other day. You said we could put it on a podcast sometime.
What are you talking about?
The Mighty Retro Art Players?
Yes. The Mighty Retro Art Players.
Yeah, the Mighty Retro Art Players.
You said we could do it.
I know I said that, but I didn't think he would really do it.
What's the matter? Don't you think we're good enough?
Well, it's not that I don't think that it's going to work. I just don't think people are quite ready for Retrobot Players.
But you promised.
Yeah, you said we could do it.
You promised us.
I don't think people are quite ready for this, but...
Don't worry, Keith. They'll like us.
Besides, we're lovable machines.
Okay. Away we go.
But first, for bare skin beauty, it's bath-sized...
Retro Radio Podcast.
...with its famous beauty lather. Yes, bath-sized...
Retro Radio.
For loveliness all over.
There's something thrillingly new in this wonderful beauty lather of bath size.
Retro Radio Podcast.
New fragrance, new charm, new allure. See if...
Retro-OTR.com.
Save in your daily tub or shower. Doesn't leave your shoulders, arms and back. Yes, all of you softer and smoother. Completely lovelier all over. You'll thrill to the tender whisper of perfume it leaves on your skin. A whisper that says, come hither to romance.
And this new bath size...
Retro Radio Podcast.
...is so big, so thrifty, economical to use because it lasts so long and gives so much soft, lovely lather so fast.
That soft, lovely lather with its alluring new fragrance is...
Retro-OTR.com.
Alone.
Retro Radio Podcast.
His famous beauty lather. Yes, a new fragrance, new charm, new allure that can make every woman a vision of delight in the new revealing fashions that show so much more of you.
So remember, for bare skin beauty, it's bath size.
Retro Radio Podcast.
With its famous beauty lather. Yes, bath size.
Retro Radio Podcast.
For loveliness all over.
Get bath size.
Retro Radio Podcast.
Tomorrow. Menfolk love it too.
Amos and Andy, December 27th, 1930. Andy's thoughts have turned towards his proposed marriage to Madam Queen. Amos, realizing Andy's mental strain, has been very lenient with him on that account. Andy is down in the dumps. He spent the entire day in the taxicab office, and now, as the scene opens, we find him sitting on the side of his bed in the rooming house. He has two large pieces of paper on a chair directly in front of him and a pencil in his hand as Amos enters. Here they are.
Well, hello there, Andy. What you doing home so early tonight?
Oh, I don't know. I kinda left Madam Queen a little early. Thought I'd come home and get some rest, think of everything.
What is you got there on the paper?
I'll explain it to you in a minute. I ain't finished with it yet. Deus tostastix.
Deus what?
Oh, figures and things like that. Tostastix.
Well, son, you is on the road to getting married.
I might be on the road, but I ain't walking down the road myself. Somebody's pushing me down there.
Anything wrong?
No, it just look like I'm getting deep all the time, though. I almost made up my mind to ask Madam Queen to put off the wedding.
You did? Who?
Yeah, I had it all arranged to ask her to put it off cause I was going tell her that my mama asked me never to get married on an odd year like 31, but if I'd asked her that now, we'd get married December the 31st, so dad wouldn't have none.
Is you told her that you is all ready to get married?
I ain't told her nothing. All I do is go places with her and sign things.
What is you don't sign now?
Well, last night she told me that she wanted me to go out with her tonight and look at a flat, so I went up and we picked one out. I give the man $2 and signed some kind of papat. I don't know what it was. Signed up for yet.
Well, what is you doing renting a flat if you don't know if you go and get married or not?
Well, what is you going do when two peoples is working on you? I put my hands in my pocket now and that, if I keep in there, I would sign nothing with him.
Well, how you happen to sign it?
That's what I's telling yo. Madam Queen was working on me, and so was the salesman. I went to shake hands with the man, and he had a fountain pen in his hand. First thing I know I had it in my hand. Madam Queen had hold of my wrist, put it down on the papa, and the first thing I know I was written my name.
For yo knowed it, who?
I don't think that it means nothing, no cause he said to me how about signing on the dotted line. Madam Queen said all right, but when I signed the line wasn't dotted, it was a straight line.
Straight line?
Yeah, he calls me the 10 and 10. I know I ain't dead. But I give him $2 to get out of it. I'll straighten that out.
You said it, you is getting in deeper all the time.
And the funny part of it is, I don't wanna do none of this stuff. I just find myself going and signing. Monday we pick out wallpaper. I'll have to make a deposit on that.
If you could get all the money that you don't put up for deposits, you could get along for about a month on that money.
Don't I know it? I ought to get me a deposit collector.
What kind of wallpaper you gonna pick out?
I ain't going pick out none. She do de picking. All I do is argue with the man, try to tell him I don't want it, see how little I can put up for a deposit, cause I figure I lose it anyway.
You certainly handling these good.
What yo mean?
Well, you just go places and sign things, and you don't know whether you'll want him or not?
She makes up my mind in her head. I figure that, if I can get out of this mess by signing a few papers he and giving a few dollars there, I is better off than I has been.
Well, what is you going to do on your wedding day?
I don't know, I was just thinking, how far is Mexico? They can't get you there, can they?
Oh, they can get you anywhere. She'll get you.
I know she, what I ain't asked yo dad asked, if the police can get yo.
Well, I don't know.
I was talking to a friend of mine tonight about it.
Who?
The barman, he been married 5 times. I figure if he can get out of 5 of them, he ought to be able to help me get out of 1.
What he tell yo?
He told me, if I want to run away, to run up to Canada. They'd have to get expedition people to get me back. I told him that I didn't want to run far, I just wanted to get out the way for a few days. But I don't know.
You wanna get out of it all right?
I wanna get out of it. What do you think I argon for and giving up the body $2?
Look like to me you just doing the wrong thing.
Well, I'll show you what I've been figuring he today. I got 2 sheets so papa he.
What is the?
Well, one of them is new rules dat I is going, make after the first ODA. The other one is excuses I can't tell Madam Queen to get out of this wedding.
Read me some dim excuses.
Well, the first one that popped in my head don't mean nothing, but I put it down. Number 1, I don't feel like getting married.
Yee, that's great. That ought to be enough right there. You must have strained yourself thinking that one, didn't you?
Don't get sarcastic now, or I won't treat you nothing.
Go on, read 'em to me. If D aren't no better than that one though you might as well tear up D list.
Number 2, the repression is on, and it's gonna get better around March.
What else you got?
Then I got this one down here that I told yo, mama told me never to get married on yod yet.
She don't care nothing about what yo mama told yo.
Then I got another one down here. Would we be happy? Dat's goin' make her mad, and I can't show her dat one. Then the next one is it's right for a man to marry a girl 10 years older than he is?
Is she that much older than you is?
She is 12 years older than I think. But I's letting her off easy with 10, and even dat's goin' make her mad.
How you know she's that old?
Well, I remember her telling me once something about the World's Fair in Chicago, and she once kinda slipped and said something about she had her picture took there, and then she say she had her picture took when she was 10 years old, and I saw the picture and on the back of down in the corner, I saw World's Fair Chicago, 1892, and I got hold of a bookie pat, and he figured it out for me, she's about 48 years old.
Boy, I didn't know she was that old.
She got so much of that beauty cream off of there, she rubbed that on her face all the time, keep her looking good.
Well, what else you got on the list?
That's all the excuses, and he's some new rules for 1931. Yo know I go and turn off a new leaf.
One leaf aren't gone do you no good.
What yo mean?
You gotta start right from the beginning again, and get another book. You is in the wrong book. Much less the page.
The first thing on the New Year's things is don't get married. Number 2, don't write no love letters to nobody. Number 3, don't promise no girl nothing.
You just got a lot of crazy things down there that you done already done.
Yeah, these 2 lists ain't no good, is they?
No, I tell you the truth, Andy, you aren't going get nowhere figuring on papi. You gotta go right up to Madam Queen and tell her what you gon' do.
What's today? Saturday, ain't it?
Yee, today is Saturday, and January the 1st is next Thursday.
That's next week that I's supposed to get married. Tain't no use for me to worry about it this week and spoil this week. The thing for me to do is to start to work on that early Monday morning and see what can be done.
The longer you wait, the tougher it's going be.
I got an idea. I could be kidnapped.
What you mean?
No, that ain't going to work. Lem see.
You'll find that the best way out of it is just go right to her.
Boy, that be just like going in the frontline trenches when the war's on.
Well, what is you going to do?
How much do it cost to go to a hospital and lay down and tell them you sick? No, that ain't no good. She bring the pre-chair right off at air. Amos, on January 1st, the fireworks is going start. And let that be a lesson to you.
Andy was played by our very own, Tom, and Amos was a special guest retrobot, Tashi.
And you are about to enjoy another great feature.
The Fibber McGee and Molly Show. Each weekday at this time, NBC brings you the Fibber McGee and Molly program, transcribed, written by Phil Leslie and directed by Max Hutto. Fibber and Molly will be with you in a minute. Within the next 20 seconds,
a fire will break out somewhere in the United States. Lives may be lost, property damaged, homes or buildings destroyed. Yes, there are 4,600 fires in America each day of the year. They kill 11,000 persons and disfigure or severely burn thousands more. 90% of all fires which start in the home can be traced to human carelessness. By obeying a few simple rules of fire prevention from now on, you and I can protect ourselves and our families from this devastating menace. Rule one is don't smoke in bed or discard lighted cigarettes carelessly. Rule two, clean out old newspapers, magazines, and other inflammable debris. Rule three, promptly repair defective wiring equipment. Replace worn or frayed wiring as soon as you notice it. Fire won't wait till tomorrow. Rule four, use only those cleaning fluids which will not burn. And last but not least, be careful with matches. Keep them out of the reach of small children. Remember, it doesn't pay to gamble with fire. The odds are against you every time. The big talk around 79 Wistful Vista this week is about the speech that Mr. McGee is going to deliver tomorrow at the very exclusive Executives Club luncheon. He just finished a telephone conversation at the moment, and his wife says...
Who was that on the phone, McGee? He sounded like a very important man.
He is, kiddo. That was Mr. Willoughby, the president of the SAPS.
The SAPS?
Mm-hmm. The Society for the Advancement of Purchases in the Stores. It's a businessmen's organization.
Oh.
He's the guy that's going to sit next to me at the Executive Club luncheon tomorrow and introduce me to all them rich millionaires that I'm the guest speaker of before.
Somebody better introduce you. You'll certainly be a total stranger in that crowd. Willoughby, eh? Is that the Mr. Willoughby, the one who owns the transit system, the airline, and all the real estate west of 14th Street?
That's him, Tootsie. He wanted to know what I was going to talk about.
Did you tell him about 3 hours?
Why do you keep saying that? This speech isn't so long. It just seems that way.
Oh.
I told Willoughby to be sure the fried chicken is crisp and not to seat me next to any members of the city council.
Why not?
Oh, you know how long it takes them guys to do anything. Before you can get them to pass the peas, it has to be seconded and put to a standing vote.
You know, I'd love to be there tomorrow, dearie. When you stand up and all those millionaires applaud...
Oh, I almost forgot what else Willoughby called me for.
What?
Well, he's going to introduce me, of course, and he points out that he doesn't know very much about me.
A wise move on your part.
He says he wants to give me a big build-up, naturally, so if I don't mind, he'd like to see a little background on me. You know, the kind of stuff. Education, college degrees, war record, business connections, interesting experiences, and all stuff like that there.
Poses a problem, doesn't it?
Oh, I don't know. I'll dig up a few fascinating facts about myself for him. I may not be any millionaire.
May not be.
But I've had a pretty interesting life, kiddo, so far. I wonder how many of them big shots were ever in vaudeville with Fred Nittany, for instance.
A good point. Maybe you ought to come on juggling a few water glasses and wearing a couple of those small American flags stuck in your ears, because that would certainly get you the applause.
Oh, no, Molly, this is serious. I'll look through my stuff and I'll... You hear that parakeet? He's even interested in my speech. Ain't you, Buster?
That's right, baby. You just speak right up. Isn't he sweet, McGee? I'm so glad we got that little bird.
Come in.
Hello there, kids. Where is it? Where is it? Can I see it? Where is it? Where is it?
What do you mean? What do you mean, where is it?
Doc Gamble says you had a new addition to the family last week, and I run all the way over here to see it. I would have brought a present, but I didn't have time to stop.
Wait a minute. Take it easy. There he is. In the cage there.
Huh?
It's a bird. A talking bird. Speak up, Buster. Come on, speak to the old-timer.
Listen to that, McGee. Hear him speak?
Sure.
Couldn't understand a word he said, kids. Foreigner, ain't he?
Yeah, he can't understand you, too, either.
Well, like I was saying to Bessie just yesterday,
Oh, how is Bessie these days, anyway? We haven't seen her in ages.
Oh, Bessie's just fine, daughter. Cuter than a basket of kittens and just about as hungry all the time.
You two still going together, are you?
Yep. He went to one of them radio quiz shows last night, kids. Had a fascinating evening.
Really?
Had a fella on the stage there with a microphone, a big voice, and a smile that looked like somebody opened the door on a china closet.
I know the guy you mean.
Called me and Bessie up on the stage, and Bessie answered 2 questions right in a row.
Well.
Won first prize.
Wonderful. What were the questions?
First he asked her name, then he asked her my name. Bessie got the answers backwards, but they give her the prize anyhow. A free trip for one with all expenses paid to Sydney, Australia.
My goodness, that's quite a prize. When is she going?
Not till she figures out some way to win a trip back, daughter. So long, kid.
So long, old timer.
There's more fun with the McGees shortly. Most of us have been called away from home and loved ones at one time or another, and we know from the experience that there is nothing quite as important during those days of separation as mail, a good old letter from home. Any man or woman in the armed forces will tell you the only call that takes precedence over mess is mail call, and when a letter is more important to a hungry GI than food, you know it means something. The truce in Korea doesn't mean we should stop writing letters to our men and women in service, whether in U.S. camps or overseas. Mail from home is just as important now as it ever was. Yes, in some respects, it's even more important. The action, the strain, the anxieties of war can keep a soldier's mind occupied. But when the letdown comes, the time to relax, that's when morale needs a shot in the arm. Your soldier knows the shooting is over. He's done his big job, and now he wants to get home. But unfortunately, there's still a lot to keep him for a while. So don't let him down. Help keep up his morale. Write that letter today.
What on earth are you doing with all that junk, McGee?
This junk, my dear, is my old scrapbooks I brought down out of the attic. I'm looking up my past to give Willoughby some build-up material. You know, to give me a build-up with when he introduces me to speak tomorrow.
Oh, that. Mm-hmm. Are you supposed to take it to him or what?
No, his secretary's coming over to pick it up this afternoon. So far, I haven't found quite the right kind of material yet. I got to impress them executives some way, you know. Here, let's look at my newspaper clippings.
Here's a nice picture here.
Hmm?
From the Peoria Star, 1909. Says McGee boy gets head stuck in churn.
Hmm.
Shows your sister Kitty greasing your head. Can't see your face, though.
No, that stuff won't help. I got a box of things here to show him, though.
What's that?
My medals.
Medals?
Mm-hmm. From the First World War. Here's my good conduct ribbon. It's a little tore from the time I got into that fight with those two lieutenants.
What two lieutenants?
The ones who said I didn't deserve a good conduct medal.
Oh. What's this?
Ah, that's my old bayonet. Look out, kiddo, it's still pretty sharp. You know this thing once saved my life?
Heavenly days.
Yep. I was on leave in Paris when three ruffians cornered me in an alley. Luckily, I had this toad sticker with me. I raised it over my head and yelled, "Come one step further and somebody's going to get hurt."
Was anybody hurt?
Yep. Me. Took a big nick out of my ear. That's why I say, look out, it's still pretty sharp. I think I better put it away.
Where do you keep that thing?
Right here in this box next to the iodine. That's something Willoughby can talk about when he introduces me. My war record.
Yes. Introducing our guest speaker, Mr. Fibber McGee.
Yeah.
Who in the First World War distinguished himself by cutting a hunk out of his ear with his own bayonet in an alley in Paris and... No, McGee.
I guess not. Well, let me see. Here's my high school annual. Must be something in there that... Hey, I know. My chemistry class. I got an award in chemistry, you know.
I didn't know that.
Oh, I was always messing around with chemicals, Molly. My graduating class voted me the boy most likely to explode. Willoughby might like to... No, I guess not.
Why doesn't he just say, and now, Mr. Fibber McGee, and sit down and let you have it?
Oh, you can't do that, Molly, at a snazzy luncheon like this. Those big shots want to know who they're listening to. Who is this guy, McGee? Is he an ex-ambassador, a big financier, or what? You got to be important to make a speech to a gang of... Oh, my gosh. If this is Willoughby's secretary, come to get the dope on me. Now,
No, it's just Dr. Gamble. Mm. Come in.
Hello, Molly. Hiya, sonny boy.
Afternoon, doctor.
Hi, Doc. I thought you were old man Willoughby's secretary till I caught the gleam of that blue serge suit that liked to put my eye out.
Willoughby's secretary?
He's coming over to pick up some biography on himself here, so Mr. Willoughby will know how to introduce him tomorrow.
So you're still going through with that mad scheme to expose your illiteracy at the executives club tomorrow, are you?
What does that mean?
Just that, sonny.
See now, he does have a pretty good speech, doctor, if he can just read his own typing.
I'll retype it.
What's the speech about?
I call it The Little Man Looks at Big Business.
Isn't that good, Doctor?
That is good. And I don't know a little a man to look at it.
Biggest problem now is to figure out how Mr. Willoughby can introduce him. McGee seems to think he has to have some fascinating background of some sort.
Oh, my gosh, I'll bet this is her. No, I'll take it. I'll tell her I invented the cotton gin. Tell her I discovered Billy Martin. I'll tell her that I'm...
Hush, dearie. Come in.
Oh, good afternoon, McGee's residence.
Yes, you're Miss...
Callahan, madam. I'm secretary to Jason J. Willoughby. Why, hello, Dr. Gamble.
Hello, Doris. Let me do the honors. Molly, this is Miss Callahan. Doris, Mrs. McGee.
How do you do, I'm sure.
And this is the gentleman you came to see, Doris, Mr. McGee.
How do you do, sir?
Charmed, miss. Charmed.
I can give you all the information Jason needs on this lad, Doris.
Oh, good.
You stay out of this, Fatso. I'll
McGee.
Take...
McGee. You see, miss...
you want to know all about my college degrees, sis. Miss. Tell Willoughby that the Sorbonne in Paris...
Doris, I...
Calm down, Doc.
McGee. I think the doctor wants to speak.
Thank you, my dear. Doris, you tell Willoughby that Mr. McGee doesn't want to be introduced as a great scholar.
That's for sure.
I see.
And he doesn't want Jason to make any reference to fortunes that Mr. McGee has made and lost.
I don't.
Nor does he want any discussion of honorary degrees, of diplomatic decorations, or of his experience as an explorer, an adventurer.
Oh, good, good.
Yes. Yes, good.
This is a modest man, my dear. Ask Jason to introduce him tomorrow simply as a man of the people. A common man with a message.
And they don't come any commoner, sis. Miss. You may tell Jason that I wish to be thought of simply as an average American.
Yes, sir.
When I appear before this little gathering tomorrow, it will be as a man who speaks for the people, of the people. Bye.
We'll say goodnight to Fibber and Molly in a moment. More great comedy entertainment is yours for the listening tomorrow night when the NBC Radio Network presents the Bob Hope Show and the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show. Everyone knows Bob Hope's wisecracking, rapid-fire style of humor, the stock in trade which elevated Bob to the heights of the comedy kingdom. You'll enjoy his program tomorrow night with the music of Les Brown's Band of Renown, the song stylings of Margaret Whiting and Bob's special guest stars. Later, on the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, listen to another fast-paced comedy as Phil mixes with Elliot Lewis, Julius Abruzzo, and Brother William to come out low man on the totem pole. Of course, there'll be songs by Phil and Alice to add to your listening pleasure and to top off the comedy carryings on. Also on Friday evening, listen to young and popular Eddie Fisher with his quarter hour of pleasure-filled song stylings and to the Dinah Shore Show featuring this glamorous songbird and the program of your favorite music. Friday and every day, you'll hear America's greatest radio programs on this station of the NBC Radio Network.
Well, gee, Doc, thanks a lot for all the nice things you said about me.
Yes, it was really nice. How'd you ever think of all that, Doctor?
I don't know. Sometimes I scare myself.
Stick around, Doc. Stay for dinner, huh?
Yes, do, Doctor.
No, thank you, Molly. I've got to get home. I want to wash my mouth out with soap. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Al.
NBC has brought you the Fibber, McGee, and Molly program, transcribed with Bill Thompson as the old-timer, Arthur Q. Bryan as Dr. Gamble, and Marion Richmond as Miss Callahan. This is John Wald inviting you to be with us again tomorrow night for another visit with Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
Just for laughs, here, Can You Top This? Tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
Presented by the Retro Radio Podcast. Retro-OTR.com.
Good night. It was nice to meet you.